And welcome to The Morning Magazine, your Front Range morning news program here on Community Radio, KGNU. It's Friday, February 28th. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Hanalee Myers. Coming up on today's Morning Magazine, 2020 is the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment and the League of Women Voters. So we have the Volunteer Communications Director of the League of Women Voters, Boulder County, here in the studio to talk to us about the organization's history, the challenges they faced and continue to face, as well as some of the organization's successes. Then, people in Fort Collins and Denver will get a chance to hear from a national expert in gun violence and migration when he comes to talk at events in the metro area. We'll hear how gun sales in the U.S. are driving violence south of the border, which is in turn pushing people to migrate north. Activists in Fort Collins are planning a rally at the New Belgium Brewery this weekend to call for a boycott in the wake of the beer company's recent sale to a company with links to the Myanmar military. We'll hear from one of the Fort Collins activists who has been protesting the sale since last year. Coming up at 8:30 on Connections, the topic is a proposal that the state of Colorado create an award to recognize and honor individuals who perform their duties as public servants in accordance with established laws, rules, and norms, despite threats to their career or the well-being of themselves and their families. Join Claudia Craig, Jim Banks, and Joel Edelstein on Connections at 8:30 for that conversation. And as always, listener calls will be invited. But first, at 5 minutes past 8 o'clock, it's time for your local headlines. Here's Steve Miller.
About 70 people rallied Thursday in support of a Mexican immigrant who has spent 1,000 days living in sanctuary at a Southwest Colorado church. KSJD's Daniel Rizel reports Rosa Subado seeks a path to citizenship through Congress.
After marching up to Representative Scott Tipton's Durango office with over 2,700 signatures, supporters are hoping the congressman will sponsor a private bill granting permanent residency. Wendolyn Omana works with local immigrant advocacy groups. She says Tipton needs to make the next move.
If he can use it wisely, we are here to ask him to use his privilege wisely.
A statement from Tipton's D.C. office says Subido's bill does not meet House criteria and has directed supporters to go through Senator Michael Bennett. Subido's attorney wants a decision from Tipton within 30 days. I'm Daniel Rizel in Durango.
Rosa Subido is one of several immigrants in sanctuary and churches around the state. She has been writing poems from her site in sanctuary for a new project of Boulder's Modus Theater, which features stories of immigrants in sanctuary, where the audience becomes part of the story and the solution. It will be performed next week at the Dairy Arts Center in Boulder, and we'll hear more on that next week on The Morning Magazine. Colorado joined six other states and the District of Columbia in suing the Trump administration over a rule requiring insurance companies to send a second bill, separate bill for abortion and other reproductive health coverage. The Colorado Sun reports that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services policy, which went into effect Tuesday, applies to states that allow companies with insurance policies that people buy on their own. HHS says the rule is to make sure that no federal funding for coverage of abortion services in these states is maintained. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser said he filed the lawsuit after hearing concerns from Colorado Insurance Commission. He feels this might cause insurers to drop their abortion and reproductive health coverage. The Attorney General also sees the rule change as being part of a broader national effort to roll back women's access to abortions. Weiser has filed at least 14 lawsuits against Trump administration since taking office in January 2019. And in today's weather, sunny and breezy throughout today with a high in the upper 50s. Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, mostly sunny and breezy with a high in the low 60s. But then Sunday, rain is coming, but not starting until about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. High Sunday in the low 50s. And then Sunday night, that rain changes to snow with a low of 23. Up in Nederland today, sunny and windy at a high of 43. And on Saturday, partly sunny and windy, high of 46. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
and you're listening to your independent community radio station, KGNU. Well, again, 2020 is a special year. It's the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment. It's also the anniversary for the League of Women Voters. The League of Women Voters of Boulder County is celebrating this anniversary all year long, and specifically this Sunday, March 1st, at an event at the Boulder JCC. And we have Elizabeth Crow, Volunteer Communications Director for the League of Women Voters Boulder County, here in the studio to tell us a little bit more about the event, as well as some of that history and some of the successes and challenges of the organization. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us in the studio.
Thank you very much.
So give us that history lesson. Tell us about the League of Women Voters and where the local piece fits in there as well.
Sure. So the League of Women Voters is a national organization that also operates at the local and state levels through various chapters. And it was founded in 1920, right after the United States passed the 19th Amendment. The League was really developed to help, you know, women understand and utilize their newfound right to vote. And the suffrage movement, was active for decades to get to that point. Interestingly, Colorado as a state was the second state in the country to give women suffrage. And that came about in 1893. And so in some ways, Colorado was ahead of the country in that way. One thing that we at the League really want to acknowledge and kind of bring into the present conversation is that the League, when it was founded, was really led by white women. And the 19th Amendment, in fact, when it was passed, really only applied to white women. And so it's really part of our responsibility to make sure that as we move forward, kind of for the next 100 years, we are really doing so without the kinds of compromises that some of the League leaders made, in the early 1900s, in order to get the 19th Amendment passed. Some of those activities included, you know, trying to kind of lobby to southern states and to legislators there that, you know, this was only a right that was going to be granted to white women, not women of color. We reject that. We don't want to make those kinds of compromises, not in the past and not moving forward. And so that's a big part of our mission, again, as we look forward to the next 100 years.
So speaking of that, what's some of the work that the League is doing to kind of address that issue, to try to bring in that sort of diversity and inclusion into the League?
Yeah, so a lot of our work, again, in the more recent past and currently at the local and at the state and national level, is to really work to make sure that the voting rights and the that any voter disenfranchisement is eliminated and that everyone has the right to participate in our civic process. Our tagline and kind of mission is about making sure that everyone has the information and the inspiration and the right to participate however they choose in our democratic process. And so we are about really empowering those voters. Colorado is really privileged to have, you know, some of the best voter processes in the country. Things like mail-in ballots, things like being able to register to vote and vote on the same day are the kinds of things that don't exist in other states necessarily that make it really easy for people to engage in this process without discriminatory practices. Some of our most recent successes have also been kind of looking at the democratic process itself. So, for example, in the last election, voters approved amendments Y and Z, which go further to ensure that gerrymandering practices don't happen here. That means that people who are kind of currently holding office are less inclined to kind of lock themselves in, that we have races that are more competitive. And also it gives the power to kind of drawing district maps to a more bipartisan and team that includes independent voters, people who are unaffiliated with any political party, rather than what has been the practice is that those district lines are drawn up by people who, you know, reflect majority parties. And those are some of the things that really kind of at the core of our democratic process are making sure that it is really open and accessible to all people.
And any other successes or challenges that come to mind, just things that really stand out when looking at the history of this whole 100-year history of the league that are worth mentioning?
Absolutely. So there are just a lot nationally, so many threats to the voting process, so many threats to voting rights. And the league nationally really is working on that, on those issues, and making sure, even though they may or may not apply to us directly in our community here in Boulder County or even in Colorado, because we're also a national organization, we have that ability to kind of build that power and momentum and take action on all levels of government. There's also a threat here in Colorado regarding kind of the strength of our democracy, and that is that in the last election, the state legislature also brought Colorado into the National Popular Vote Compact, which is quite simply would change the way that we elect our president to one person, one vote, rather than utilizing the Electoral College. And it allows that kind of change without having to change the Constitution. Unfortunately, kind of powers that in the state that don't want the national popular vote have now succeeded in petitioning so that that is going to be an issue on the ballot. So while we do want everybody to participate in that process and get to weigh in, it's unfortunate that we have to really do the re-education and engagement all over again. So we really hope that people will focus on that issue and become informed and engaged, and we encourage people to support the national popular vote.
So tell us about this event that's taking place on Sunday. Give us the details there.
Yeah, so we're really excited to be able to have host an event that is open to the public. It's a ticketed event. We are trying to build some capacity and raise some resources for 2020 and beyond. But it is to celebrate the history of our organization at the national level. Despite many challenges, the organization has done so much in the past 100 years for voter empowerment and voter engagement. And we just want to take some time to celebrate that. We will have food. We'll have actually some photos as part of a statewide and national She Is Me photojournalism project, which people can check out on the League of Women Voters of Colorado site. We had many of our Boulder County members participate in that project. And also we have a guest speaker who is an Eleanor Roosevelt impersonator, who's going to, kind of be in that presence and sharing her, perspectives on why the vote was not enough, and then engaging with audience members in character. So it should be really interesting and kind of a bridge again between, the past and women's leadership in the past and what we think it looks like and should look like in the future.
And where can listeners find more information?
So listeners can find more information on the League of Women Voters of Boulder County website, which is lwvbc.org.
And that was Elizabeth Crowe, Volunteer Communications Director for the League of Women Voters of Boulder County. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Have a great day.
The current crisis in migration at the U.S.-Mexico border is being driven by anti-migrant policies and an increase in violence that is connected to the U.S. gun trade. This is according to many immigrant rights advocates who are drawing attention to the humanitarian crisis and proliferation of guns and militarism from the United States. John Lindsay Poland is the coordinator for Stop U.S. Arms to Mexico, a project of global exchange that researches and advocates to stop the weapons trade to Mexico. He'll be speaking at several events around the Front Range in the coming days. He spoke about the current situation with KGNU's Maeve Conran.
The violence in Mexico and in Central America is fed by weaponry coming from the United States. And that weaponry, in many cases, is coming through illegal trafficking from the retail gun market in the United States. And it's also going through legal exports that are going to military and police forces in the region in order to fight the drug war, to fight organized crime. So the retail market in the United States, especially in states like Texas and Arizona, is such that you can go into a firearms dealer and legally purchase multiple military-grade assault weapons and walk out. And this is feeding what people call the ant trade, by which it's very easy to get those weapons over the border into Mexico because the border enforcement is focused on the south to north movement of people and things. And also, both countries are prioritizing legal commerce. So there's just an enormous volume of things going over the border. So at the border, it's very hard to stop weaponry that's coming from this retail gun market and then is going to organized criminal groups that are trying to control territory. And so they want military-grade weaponry. And they're using it to execute unprecedented levels of violence in Mexico and in Central America. A lot of that violence is directed at migrants from Central America who are passing through Mexico. Some of that is in homicides and forced disappearances, but it's also in extortion and kidnapping, where armed groups are stopping migrants and finding what relatives they have in the United States and then getting them to go to ATM machines and the money. So then the other route of weaponry is through exports of the United States that are in other countries that are going to Mexico and to Central America and are going to forces that in many cases are either committing gross human rights abuses with impunity, with no prosecution. The case of 43 disappeared students in Ayotzinapa from 2014 is one case where police used Colt AR-15 variant weapons in order to attack students and disappeared 43 of them.
Sounds like we have this flow of weaponry, legal and illegal, even if they are purchased legally in a border state like Texas, it then turns into illegality when it crosses the border going south. And at the same time, then that is prompting this flow of humanity, you know, north fleeing that gun violence. And yet we never hear the context of this when we are hearing conversations either in the corporate media or political rhetoric when it comes to migration. How closely are the two things linked?
Well, increasingly, they are more and more linked. So one indication of that, for example, is that the people coming from Central America and trying to reach the U.S. and the U.S. border, there are fewer and fewer single men. There are more and more women with children. And that's because they're not coming to seek work. They're coming because the communities in which they live in San Pedro Sula and Guatemala City and other parts of the region are flooded with guns that are going to gangs or they're going to local police, and they can't live there anymore and survive. So the idea that this is all economic migration and that there are no there's no basis for seeking asylum. It is contradicted by the fact more and more, like, and the violence that people encounter on the way, you know, the idea that Mexico is a safe third country for migrants from Central America to wait while their request for asylum in the United States is being processed is absurd. Because those are some of the most unsafe cities in the hemisphere, as declared by the U.S. State Department itself. So the United States is just forcing people back into unsafe situations without addressing the reasons why people have to leave. And in many cases, they have gone back and they've been assassinated. There's many cases documented in Mexico, in El Salvador, in Guatemala, of people who were returned. They sought asylum, they were deported, detained and deported, sent back, and by Mexico as well. So Mexico is also participating in this, and then and then are killed in the same communities where they came from.
Is anything being done? Is there any certainly political action happening around this?
Well, there are many efforts. I think a lot of efforts are seeking to get support for the people who are looking for asylum. So that might be people who are already detained in the United States and getting legal assistance for their asylum claims. There are humanitarian organizations that are doing the best they can to support people who are in very precarious situations in northern Mexican cities awaiting their turn to hear their case to be heard in the United States. There are also efforts to address the flow of guns. And I would say that a lot of the same things that in the United States people are working for in order to reduce gun violence would also reduce gun violence in Mexico. So in this country, there's 60 to 70% popular support for a new federal assault weapons ban. That is probably the single most important measure in order to reduce violence in Mexico, because criminal organizations want new assault weapons, and the United States market, the retail market, is the best source for those. So universal background checks for gun purchases has very high support, popular support in the United States. It's the same thing. So in Colorado, there is a ban on high-capacity magazines, which is, that's a something that is used often together with assault weapons. If you prevent the high-capacity magazines from getting into Mexico, that could cut off a source for organized criminal groups to commit these kinds of violent crimes. That should be federal. In Colorado, there's a role for legislators and for communities to say, we have this here, we want it to happen at the federal level, because both between states and between countries, the gun laws are really only as strong as all of the states. When you have weak gun laws in one state, like a place like Wyoming, you're going to have weaponry coming from that state into a state that has stronger gun laws. And that happens internationally as well. So Mexico has very strong gun laws, but the United States does not. And so there's heavy trafficking from the United States into Mexico for that reason.
John Lindsay Poland will speak Sunday, March 1st from 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. at Trinity Lutheran Church. That's at 301 East Stewart Street, Fort Collins. And Tuesday, March 3rd from 5 to 7 at American Friends Service Committee. That's at 1420 North Ogden Street in Denver.
This program is made possible by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Fisk Planetarium on the CU Boulder campus, featuring Voyagers, a theatrical performance offering creative access to science and math through the performing arts. More information at colorado.edu/Fisk or by calling 303-492-5002.
Activists in Fort Collins are planning a rally at the New Belgium Brewery this weekend to call for a boycott in the wake of the beer company's recent sale to a company with links to the Myanmar military. Last December, just as the sale was finalized and approved by the employee owners of the brewery, KGNU's Maeve Conran spoke with Lynn Thompson with the Fort Collins Community Action Network.
Little Lion is a subsidiary of a parent company based in Japan called Kirin Holdings Company Limited. So Kirin is a company with very well-documented ties to Myanmar's military. There's at least two different types of connection here. Kirin admits to having made direct donations to the Myanmar military during the peak of the Rohingya genocide in 2017. So to be clear, the Myanmar military has been engaging in atrocities against its own people for decades. But this really gained a great deal of international attention in 2017. when the Rohingya genocide really escalated. There were over 1 million refugees fleeing Myanmar, fleeing mass murder, rape, arson, just absolute brutality. And during that exact period, Kiran donated directly to the military, made three separate, fairly small donations, but still, and came under a fair amount of scrutiny for it. Amnesty International wrote a report in early 2018 calling for a criminal investigation into Kiran for those donations. But that's not the only connection. The bigger and ongoing connection is that Kiran owns another subsidiary company, Myanmar Brewing, which of which a very substantial portion is co-owned by a company called Myanmar Economic Holdings Limited, or MEHL, which is a military-owned conglomerate. So the as the UN reported in this August report earlier this year, these business ventures like MEHL are actually how the Myanmar military is funding its operations. It's how the generals and the battalions actually get their money, is through these sorts of business operations, which Kiran is in absolutely close partnership with on that. And those funds, it's not just 2017, this is an ongoing issue, is that the funds that are going to the military are funding genocide and other crimes against humanity.
Lynn Thompson with the Fort Collins Community Action Network. On Saturday, February 29th, that's tomorrow, refugees from the Karen community will be in Fort Collins to talk about the atrocities that Kiran, New Belgium's new owner, has supported in Myanmar. The Karen are an ethnic minority that was violently persecuted by Myanmar's military as part of a larger genocide campaign in the country. The group is calling for a boycott on New Belgium beer, and they have two demands. First, that Kiran is to divest from the Myanmar military, and second, that they are to pay reparations to Doctors Without Borders and Amnesty International of $4.5 million to each organization. The money will be earmarked to be used for refugees from Myanmar. Organizers will meet at 3 p.m. at the Old Town Public Library, that's 201 Peterson Street, in the community meeting room. At roughly 4:45, they will begin a march to New Belgium Brewery as a group. And that does it for The Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Lee Myers.